Mandela is mythic and personal, so it's unfortunate that Satchel Leela is not able to be with us tonight. She'd obviously been cooking, as she calls it, up this for a long time. So she said, I told this to the team, she said, well, I'll just, because I said I would do it, and she said, I'll just send you a few little draft notes, Karine Varpy. So I think I've got seven attachments and about five pages of notes. So, but you won't get all those words from me tonight. So what I tried to do in a way is take the spirit of what Satchel Leela was, what I understand is the spirit of what Satchel Leela was trying to communicate, but using my own connections with the Dharma. And I have put poetry in, I promise, but I'm afraid they're not the poems that she chose. So, but there are poems. I'm sure she would love them too. So there we go. Yeah. I mean, maybe if you want, I've got all Satchel Leela's notes. So if you want them, I could check with her whether she's happy for me to send them to you. Yeah. Okay. So let me just close your eyes for a moment. So, bring to mind something that you're in the process of transforming. It doesn't matter what it is. Some people do this New Year's resolution business. If you've done that, that might be quite an easy thing to bring to mind. So, spiritual life's about transformation. What is it, however small? Something, it doesn't matter what it is, that you're in the process of transforming. If you don't relate to that language, then you might think in terms of a quality or experience you're wanting to move away from and what you're moving towards. Something that supports your practice, supports you going deeper. And if you really can't think of anything, just choose either safety or inspiration. Okay, so you can open your eyes now. So what I'm going to ask you to do now, so we've got these paintings around the walls. They're not for, so for the rest of this year, they'll be we'll just be focusing on one, on them, one each for periods of the year of these paintings. In future, there'll be one of them up on the shrine. So, what I'm going to ask you to do now, I'm just going to ask you to look at each one of them to see if you can gain a sense of what they represent or as providing you or providing a key to what supports your practice. So you could bear in mind, have in mind, to make it more concrete, what you've just thought of. What is it that you're in the process of transforming? Yeah? And you could bear that in mind when you're looking at each of these paintings in turn. Okay, so I know some of you, like Janaka, it's going to be quite difficult for you to look at Akshobhya. So you might want to just close your eyes, or if you don't, you might find it easy if you've got a connection with the paintings, just to close your eyes and bring that Buddha to mind. So I'm sure, luckily, Janaka and Taranita are perfectly capable of doing that. Okay, so. So, Akshobhya, the blue Buddha. And in the scheme of what we're doing this year, this is integration. The quality of groundedness. connection with your experience in its fullness. And then we move on to the yellow painting, which is Ratnasambhava, that we're correlating with positive emotion. Positive emotion. So we've got metta, or loving kindness, sympathetic joy, compassion, equanimity. And ethical behaviour, particularly generosity, giving dana in all its forms with body, speech and mind. And then we move on over here to the red Buddha, that we're correlating with receptivity, spiritual receptivity, qualities of softness, openness, growth, and the right of fascination. And then to the green Buddha, Amoghasiddhi, that we're correlating with the stage of releasing from what holds us back. Sometimes also described as spiritual death. You can relate to it as release from what holds you back. Very much with fearlessness. And then lastly to the white Buddha, Vairochana, on the shrine, that we're correlating with renewal, regeneration, restoration, or otherwise known as spiritual rebirth in the system of practice. Qualities of wholeness and illumination, light. So we can use these to bring to mind and cultivate them as ways of moving from our reactive, habitual responses to more creative responses. And as practitioners of Buddhism, we communicate a vision of reality in conceptual and imaginative terms. So that's why we've made this correlation between the Triratna system of spiritual practice and these five Buddhas. They could be correlated in a different way, but that's what we're doing for this year. So I'm just going to read a very short poem by Sangharakshita, which to me communicates something of what I'm trying to get at. So it's called My Life. I'll read it twice. My life is a dance in which every movement is planned yet spontaneous. My life is a dance in which every movement is planned yet spontaneous. So the way that we relate to our own patterning, if you like, to our own kind of habitual responses, as well as to the mandala, is not, it's not fixed, it's fluid, it has this flowing or spontaneous quality to it. Vishvapani, who's a member of the order that lives in Wales, says, we know that our actions have consequences and that we can make choices that affect our future experience. So I'll say that again. We know that our actions have consequences and that we can make choices that affect our future experience. So you might think, yeah, yeah, so this is very kind of akin to the first line of the Dhammapada, isn't it? Experiences are preceded by mind, led by mind, produced by mind. So I think what that's trying to get at is that if we don't consciously make positive choices, then we'll just be driven by our habits. We'll just be driven by our conditioning. We'll be driven by those kind of grooves that we've got into. So we've got a choice. So we can either continue to make or create patterns based on our habits, or we can consciously choose to create patterns or create new patternings based on what we most deeply value. So if we don't make conscious our patterns and our habits, we'll just go along with the conditioning, we'll go along with the group, we'll go along with the social norms. So we live by patterns either way, but mostly we're just not conscious of it. So there's another poem by Sangharakshita, which I'm going to read, that I thought might communicate something of this. For you in the north, the first winter snow. For me in the south, the last autumn leaves. Meeting not long ago, we were quickly parted. Who knows when we shall meet again? With filigree work of frost, bare branches glitter. Raindrops on the window pane make strange patterns. I'll read that again. For you in the north, the first winter snow. For me in the south, the last autumn leaves. Meeting not long ago, we were quickly parted. Who knows when we shall meet again? With filigree work of frost, bare branches glitter. Raindrops on the window pane make strange patterns. So mandalas, I mean, you know, a lot of you are probably familiar with this word. Mandalas are patterns. So they can be patterns of the mind. So they can either be patterns of the unenlightened mind or patterns of the enlightened mind. So we could see personal mandalas as being the pattern of our own unenlightened mind, and the mandala of these five Buddhas that we see around us as patterns of the Buddha's enlightened mind. So to appreciate fully the qualities of the Buddha, we could see that it's like light kind of going through a prism or, you know, one of these kind of jewels. Light goes through and then it's reflected splits into the different colours of the rainbow, or in this case, the different colour of these five Buddhas, or five jhanas, as they're often termed. And I was thinking about this, and I thought, I've spent quite a lot of time in Turkey throughout my life, so I've collected for myself and my mum, who likes buying Turkish rugs, quite a lot of Turkish rugs and one Persian rug. And the sort of, if you've, well, I'm sure you've seen them. You might not have any, but I'm sure you've seen them. So they're very, they've got lots of patterning on and lots of colour. So I kind of relate to them in this kind of way, to this patterning of the symbols and the colours. So what's the relationship between our own personal mandala or patterning and the mythic mandala, or the mandala of the enlightened mind, or the potential kind of our or potential enlightened mind, because it's sort of our mind, if you see what I mean, that we're interested in. So the Buddha and Sangharakshita give us loads of different ways of practicing the Dharma, don't they? I mean, that's how my primary relationship, I would say, with the Buddha is more not so much for kind of the content of what he taught, actually, is more about who he was as a teacher, and that he taught differently, didn't he, to whoever he met. He kind of had the kind of insight to know, oh yeah, Mark's this kind of person and might relate to this, or Jane's this kind of, this is what's going on for Jane, and maybe this would kind of really help if I presented it in this way. And one of them might be a very sort of conceptual formula, might talk to Mark about the Noble Eightfold Path or something. And he might just encourage Jane to focus on the colours of the rainbow, for example. Jane's got a rainbow jumper on. So it's not a formula. The Buddha or Sangharakshita in this system that we call it of spiritual practice that they're offering. Are not just saying, right, this is a formula, go away and do it and come back and tell me, in 200 years how you got on or whatever it is. It's more like they're sort of giving signposts to each of us. And some of those signposts might be helpful at a particular time and some of them might not be. And also, the Buddha spoke in a lot in kind of metaphor and verse, and Sangharakshita also, he's a wealth of poetry that he offers us. So there's the conceptual as well as the sort of imaginal, metaphorical communication of different aspects of the Dharma. And what we need to do is work out what it is that we need to follow. What is threads is it that we need to follow, and following our own inspiration. And we might work that out by other people reflecting us back or supporting us or saying, oh, Jane, I wonder if you've thought of reflecting on the colours of the rainbow, kind of whatever it is. So we might aim to kind of get to the same place in the end, wherever that kind of is, but we each have got our own journey. But actually, to say it's not even like it's sort of my journey and John's journey or whatever, it's like we're doing it together, so we are in relationship with each other and we affect each other. So I'm part of John's journey and John's part of my journey, so we're all conditions for each other as well. So it's not even as neat as kind of going, you do that, and I'll do that, and we'll come back later, and we won't have anything to talk about because we've been doing completely different things. It's not even like that. So yeah, so we contribute to each other's journey. We need each other on the journey. So the more that we each individually can bring awareness to what we have to offer, the more we can kind of be of support to each other or contribute to the joint project. So we could see this as finding out, so what's the nature of my personal mandala, my personal patterning, so that with the help of each other, we can work out which direction we need to go in, what we need to follow or move away from or move towards, what method or technique or system we need to apply. And I know some of you have heard this before, but when I was thinking about this, I thought, well, I wrote my almond tree insight on here. So there was one day I was up in one of my almond trees, pruning it, one of the taller ones, and I had this sense on my land of I've got sort of wabi-sabi shrines to these Buddhas here. And I couldn't see them all, but I knew where they are. So because I was quite high up in this almond tree, I had a bit more kind of perspective on my land, which is made of kind of different, slightly different levels, fields, terraces. And I suddenly thought, oh yeah, the spiritual life isn't about kind of developing, you know, becoming more integrated, and then I develop positive emotion, and then I work out what I need to let go of, and then I'll be reborn, and then I'll be completely chilled out. You know, or it's not about, you know, the qualities of, you know, Akshobhya or, you know, whatever, or metta or whatever. It's like, oh no, it's about that could be relatively easy, but it's not about that. It's about how all of these aspects fit together and how I work out how they all fit together and how I can become all of these things kind of in tandem, because you can't do an individual one without the others, just like I can't do this without all of you, you know. And you can't do it without me, you know. So anyway, if that makes any sense. So awareness, in a way, is a bit like this sort of awareness that we have is a bit like a sort of key. So the basis of our kind of awareness of our body, of our feelings, of our thoughts, and so on, that awareness is the basis. So we all have these different habits, and we all have our different values, and we all need different qualities or aspects of the Dharma at different times. And it's awareness that is like this sort of key kind of underneath that. Being someone who suffers a lot from irritability, being critical and resentful, this is me. So I need to focus a great deal on compassion and sensitivity to what is more tender, the sort of softer kind of messages that my body is giving me. And another example, so being someone who gains a lot of security from being in control and finding chaos really difficult, I need to cultivate a greater level of kind of contentment and focusing on sort of clarity, kind of wisdom. So I'm just offering those as kind of personal examples of what I'm talking about. I think I was saying this the other day to the women's mitra night. I worked at Tara Loka Retreat Centre for a while, and it was really rubbish for me in every quadrant on the Myers-Briggs, if anybody knows, if that makes sense to anybody, doing spreadsheets, because I just got even more critical and staccato, and I used to dream in spreadsheets. So I put a negative habit in one box, I put the antidote in the other box, I press some, hey presto, fantastic. But you know, it would be great, wouldn't it? It was like that. Well, I think it would. But it's not like that, is it? I mean, Taranita's a computer programmer, but anyway, or something like that. I don't really understand what he does, but anyway, something like that. But it's not like that, is it? It's not this kind of form. It's not spiritual life. It's not kind of formulaic in that way. Even if you would like it to be, I think I'd probably be bored very quickly anyway. But so Sangharakshita. No. So my question is more. Bearing in mind that Sangharakshita uses this language of reactive and creative mind, is more like, how do I move out of my habitual responses to the particular kind of triggers that I experience, and what is it that I need to move towards? Sangharakshita says, it's not possible, I like this, it's not possible for one person, even for a Buddha, to embody all aspects of the ideal in one human life. So I'll say that again. So Sangharakshita says, it's not possible for one person, even for a Buddha, to embody all aspects of the ideal in one human life. So that's a good thing to remember, isn't it? So it's like you're just doing what you're doing. Yeah? So, patterns and the system of practice. So Sangharakshita describes the Triratna system of practice as a pattern of how spiritual life naturally unfolds, so how it naturally just unfolds. So you could see it as a, you can see it as something that you need to follow, a path or a system that you need to follow. But you could also look at it as just a description of what just actually really happens. So the aspects of, so we've got, just say again, so you've got integration, positive emotion, release, renewal, and receptivity. So they can be seen in all of us. We all, everybody in this room has these and is in the process of engaging with these. We wouldn't be here if we didn't. We wouldn't be in this room. But so it's important to relate to these aspects as a flow, because we can't work it all out with our intellect. Okay, so I'm going to read another slightly longer quote. By Sangharakshita, which I thought described this very well. One of the things I've noticed is that in thinking about individual development and spiritual life, people tend to think very literally or linearly. We have to make sense of it in much more multi-dimensional and much less pinned down to specific definable ideas. Sorry, I'll just read that sentence again, because I didn't think I'd read it very well. We have to make our sense of it much more multi-dimensional and much less pinned down to specific definable ideas. It has to be, in a way, less graspable. In a sense, it shouldn't be too clear. And one would be justified in becoming suspicious if it became so. When you discover your pattern, it can't be pinned down intellectually. Recognize that there are other dimensions, other ways of looking at things. So, just in conclusion, so the Dharma or this system of practice, or a flow of various qualities or perspectives, where we ourselves are part of that pattern that they create. And we can learn to see more clearly the patterns we want to move away from and what we want to, and the patterns that we want to move towards. So another poem, which I'll read twice to end. This is by Portuguese poet Fernando Pessoa, I'm sure some of you know. So I'm going to actually read two slightly different translations of it. To be great, to be whole, don't exaggerate or leave out any part of you. Be complete in each thing. Put all you are into the least of your acts. So too in each lake with its lofty life, the whole moon shines. To be great, be whole. Exclude nothing. Exaggerate nothing that is not you. Be whole in everything. Put all you are into the smallest thing you do. So in each lake, the moon shines with splendour because it blooms up above.